QFM weather
with Liberty Insurance. Car insurance up for renewal in the next 30 days? Visit libertyinsurance.ie to find out why we are different.
Lingering rain will affect northern and southern counties for a time overnight. Otherwise clear, lowest temperatures of 10 to 12 degrees.
Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Thanks to Johnny Smacks and Emma, it's Monday the 31st of July and this is Game On. Coming up today, we'll debrief Ireland's World Cup campaign with Rebecca Cray and Laura Donovan. In Gaelic football, Austin O'Malley and Ross Munnelly reflect on the Dubs' return to All-Ireland glory. And we're live to Ballybrit for day one of the Galway races. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. It feels like it's been a while since Dublin were crowned All-Ireland football champions. It hasn't. It's just that Ireland have played in the interim, so we've been thinking about that quite a lot as well. It's one of those weekends where so much happened, there was so much going on that we need to have a sporting highlights chat. I'm going to start with you, Austin O'Malley. What was your sporting highlight?
Listen, Marie, I think probably yesterday in Croke Park, just being in there and the sense of occasion and everything, but I suppose to witness these two, you know, giants of the game come together, and the probably for me the subplot that was bit, you know, buried in it all was the duel of David Clifford and Michael Fitzsimons. Mm-hmm. That just roared for 70 minutes and it was incredible. I thought just to watch it, like my eyes were drawn to it, you know, off the ball, to see the covering and the tracking and the tackle of Fitz, but also to see the movement of Clifford and him trying to engineer a way to get free and so on and that. And I just thought it was really absorbing over the hour. So for me, that was the highlight. And I suppose buried in that was even Clifford's pass, you know, where he was under major. It was like, almost like a, you know, a buttonhole in heaven. He could see Gainey to get him in. And I just thought it was incredible over the hour, you know.
Yeah, that's actually my sporting highlight. And it's more Mick Fitz for me. And I mentioned it there. I was on talking to Johnny and Emma, that I'd interviewed him back in 2012, and I dug it up yesterday, and it's just amazing to read that he was that guy, the player that didn't make the underage squads, that didn't play under-21s. He said he went to two under-21 trials and he didn't get picked. So for him to have that resilience and that determination, it's just unbelievable, because there is young boys and girls everywhere who are told they're not good enough and they're not going to make it and they're not going to be the elite player and they're never going to play for their county. Fast forward 11 years and he's made history. He's 9 All-Irelands and he put in that performance yesterday, Mark and David Clifford, and along the way he qualified as a doctor. It doesn't get more impressive than that.
Yeah, I know. Look, he's an incredible guy and an incredible mindset, and like he's the poster boy for anyone that you know has a belief that they can work at their game and get to that level. And you said it there, like 9 All-Ireland middles. Let's not forget he's a 10th in All-Ireland junior middle, where he shot to prominence to get him into the squad in the first place. And
he actually said it was UCD in that interview. He said he went to UCD and he got his opportunity to play Sigerson football at that level. So I would say the late Dave Billings, who a lot of people would know and has influenced many a Dublin football career, played a big role as well in that. And
huge,
it was amazing. And even when he spoke that time about going into the dressing room and that it was difficult to step into the Dublin dressing room because he was surrounded by so many giants, but he said so many of the players took him in and made him feel comfortable and made him feel at home and obviously enabled him and empowered him to go on and do what he did.
I think so, and I think central to that too is probably Pat Gilroy, in terms of Pat Gilroy seeing something in him in terms of his mentality and his ability to work. And he's Michael Fitzsimons is so coachable. He's so coachable. He, like, there is nothing left, there's no stone left unturned in terms of his, you know, in terms of his preparation for a performance and that. And he's a guy that's constantly, you know, asking questions. He's the epitome, I suppose. There's a lot of talk around growth mindset and this, but he's the epitome of that. And just to see him yesterday, as you said, you know, to go after David Clifford, you know, in the way he did, and you know, it was a game of cat and mouse. It was almost like, you know, an arsonist and a firefighter, you know, in both respects. And to, you know, deep in the 75th minute, I'm still going and I'm still tackling. And I just thought he was the energy that he gave Dublin and put them on the front foot. And you know, there was one cameo buried in that, Marie, at the very end, where he was in playing 14 for Dublin with Clifford at full back, rolled reversal, he had him pulled up, he was underneath their own crossbar at that stage. And I just thought, for 35 years of age, to have the legs and the mindset to get up the pitch and do that and try and waste a bit of energy, burn Clifford off a bit as well. So it was just incredible.
I hope that he's back for 10. We'll see in a few months.
No doubt the man. He won't throw it in at that, I'd say he'll keep going.
Rebecca, what was your sporting highlight?
Yeah, well, obviously the Dubs beating the Kingdom was always nice as a Dub, but I think obviously today the Irish girls got their first ever World Cup point, which was not something, you know, I'm sure going into it we always hoped we'd get some sort of points or results from it, but it was nice to go out with at least a point from the group.
Yeah, I think so, and finish on a bit of a high anyway, at least to be coming home with something. Honourable mention to Daniel Whiffen as well, who came fourth in the world 1500 metre final, and that's a world stage, which is pretty phenomenal. And the National Athletics Championships on as well over the weekend, so many brilliant performances there. Sarah Lavin, of course, who we've had on this programme many the time, delighted to see her as well getting on so well. So yeah, it was one of those weekends where there was so much going on, but the big feature is, of course, today. Well, it was yesterday for the Gaelic football, but our first feature of the day is the women's football today, and the Republic of Ireland taking on Nigeria in that final group game at the World Cup. Their journey in Australia has come to an end. There will be homecoming for them on O'Connell Street on Thursday in Dublin, and no doubt there'll be lots of people turning out to see them. Overall, Rebecca Cray, how do you reflect on Ireland's journey in Australia at the World Cup?
Yeah, obviously three really spirited performances. You know, I think they left it all out there. We went into the tournament not just wanting to take part, you know, and just be there as a token. We wanted to try and go and prove ourselves on the world stage, you know, and give a good account of ourselves. And I think they done that. You know, every girl that went on there onto the pitch, you know, put their heart and soul into it. Obviously, you know, results in the first two games didn't go as planned, and look, we could have probably got something from it on another day, or from them on another day, and today then as well. Look, we went out and tried our very best, but unfortunately didn't get that win. But look, first point on the board, we can't be too upset.
No, I think the fact that they managed to do it as well, and they also managed to get the likes of Diane Caldwell on the pitch, I thought that was really important.
Yeah, 100%. I think we were calling for it earlier on, you know, when we were watching the game kind of ticking away. You were hoping, she's 97 caps, you know, she needs to get some sort of nod on the world stage. And obviously fantastic for herself, Niamh Fahey, Anya O'Gorman, Louise Quinn, all the kind of veterans of that squad. So look, fantastic, as I said, and obviously the younger girls as well got a nod from Vera to play in the tournament.
Laura Donovan, head of women's football in Drogheda United, joins us as well. Laura, what were your thoughts on the game today?
I think we started quite positive. It was nice to see Denise O'Sullivan, particularly in a more attacking role, you know, because I think everyone's been crying out for that, because we know how good Denise can be when she gets forward. And I suppose the previous two games she was sacrificed a little bit to be more defensive player, because, you know, that's the way we were looking to play. And, you know, I suppose Vera has kind of started out like that, you know, wanting to be solid and not concede. So it was nice to see Denise in a more advanced role, and obviously a little bit, I suppose she showed us a little bit of what she could do on the ball today. And yeah, there was lots of positives, particularly in the first half, probably because of that, the more advanced players. I felt there was less of a gap between Kira Carusa and the midfield, and the players were more forward earlier to support, and it wasn't as laboured as the previous games. So it was really positive to see that. In saying that, we didn't create loads of chances. Probably the best chance was, you know, after 5 minutes of Katie McKay, but she shot wide just from outside the box. But in saying that, we dominated possession, and Nigeria were kind of happy to sit back a lot of the time and just try to hit us on the break. I have to say, Courtney Brosnan's save in the second half then was absolutely incredible. Like, it was, you know, point blank range, and she hit it up onto the crossbar, and it was a crucial moment, because, like Rebecca said, it was important there to get our first point at the World Cup, and to have a clean sheet as well was just, you know, it's a proud day, and it's great to be coming away from the World Cup with something. You know, it's only 1 point, but it's our first World Cup ever. So, I mean, if you had come away and said, you know, we didn't get anything at all out of it, you know, you have that moment against Canada where Katie McCabe scored the goal. I think that was the moment of the whole thing for everybody. You know, gave all the kids watching and everybody in Ireland that bit of joy when we went ahead. And it gave us that bit of hope and stuff, you know. So that's a really special moment that we've had in the World Cup. But today it was really, really positive, I think, to get that first point and a clean sheet.
Yeah, Rebecca, just a word on Courtney Brosnan. She did that, make that amazing save, but she's been such a central part of this team throughout the qualifying campaign and now in Australia as well.
Yeah, that was a world-class save that Laura mentioned, obviously, today. You know, point-blank range, it was quality. But, you know, I think after Emma Byrne retired, we struggled to find someone to take ownership of that number one jersey. And, you know, in the last year or two, she's really excelled and, you know, come on in her game. She's demanding the box. She's, you know, her distribution has been brilliant. Her kicking, especially in that second game, is quality. So it's great to see. And she seems like such a lovely girl. You know, her approach to the game is very much, you know, positive. Mm-hmm. And she seems to be a person that all the girls look up to as well. So look, I was delighted for her today. She totally deserved that Player of the Match award as well.
So there's been a lot going on since the match finished. Let's actually hear from Vera Powell. She was speaking afterwards about her team's performance and an incident as well that occurred on the pitch. Katie, she said, called for fresh legs and indicated that Sinead Farrelly should come off. And then in the press conference, Vera Powell said that she is the coach, not Katie, and she makes the decisions.
I don't feel this is my last game because we are going home from a World Cup. And then the second, if I am at a homecoming, why would I not be at a homecoming? I go back with my team. Otherwise, you would have stayed here enjoying the World Cup.
Oh, hi, Vera. Dave Kelly, Irish Independent. And just in terms of the strategy from the bench, maybe if you could explain it compared to last week, two different games, obviously. But if you can maybe just explain that, it seems Katie McCabe was quite vociferous in trying to get some changes onto the field, but they seem to come much later than the last game, probably different circumstances.
Why would we change?
That's why I'm asking you the question. I don't know what the difference
is. If Katie McCabe says that she wants to change, it doesn't mean she's not the coach. Yeah? Everybody was doing so well. So I said, what do you want, Katie, taking the best player off? No. But that a player's allowed to be emotional and players allowed to say that. That's fine. But during the game, I do a step back and I analyze, and we make changes the moment that it's necessary.
Vera, Gavin Comiskey from the Irish Times. Just to confirm there, so your captain, Katie McCabe, asked you to make changes and you refused. Is that correct? Fair comment?
No, because a player doesn't ask and you refuse. A player can ask always, but as a coach, it's not a refusal. As a coach, you make decisions on what is necessary. A player can say everything to a coach, at least to me.
What did she say?
That she wanted fresh legs, yeah, and on her side.
And why didn't you make that change?
Because everybody was doing so well. Sinead Farrelly was arguably the best player on the pitch at that moment, so I was not prepared to take the best player off.
Vera Powell speaking to the media after today's game, and the story went on a little bit after that. Katie McCabe tweeted the emoji with the zip across its mouth, and we haven't heard anything since from anybody, but there's plenty to read into in that Vera clip and also the reaction to Katie. Laura Donovan, who's the head of women's football in Drogheda United, is with us as well. Laura, what's your interpretation of what's happened there?
Well, first of all, I suppose I would agree with Vera from the point of view that players shouldn't really be asking for changes, but from Katie's point of view, I'm thinking she's obviously feeling that Sinead's not able. Like, I mean, that was the first full game that Sinead has played for Ireland, and she's come off in the other games because she hasn't played full games. She hasn't been playing, obviously, top-level football in years. So, like, Katie was probably right in what she was saying, but it's probably... Maybe she was hinting to Vera to do it. I think Vera should really be protecting her player more. When you're talking publicly, you don't kind of just say to her, you know, say it out like that, oh, yeah, well, I'm the coach. And I just think that she could have kind of fobbed it off a little bit better in her interview, you know, because I think, obviously, it seems a little bit disjointed there, like they're not on the same page, like Katie's asking, you know, for fresh legs, and Vera's kind of said exactly what she's saying, and I don't think there's any need to, she could have fobbed it off and said, oh, you know, she just gave me a bit of information from the pitch, and that was it, and obviously it's my decision, but, like, she didn't have to kind of go into it, so maybe there is a little bit of something going on there, and obviously then when Katie comes out and tweets that, everyone's thinking, oh, there's even more going on, do you know what I mean? But, it probably will come out of obviously what's going on in the camp. But I know, like, obviously it's been kind of, there's been a lot of talk about Vera's contract and stuff, and I think the players are probably a bit annoyed about that. Like, that it's just no need to be talking about coming into your last game. Your whole focus is on the last game, and you don't want to be talking about the manager and the focus on about contracts and all of that, you know what I mean? And yeah, I think there's a bit of kind of discontent there from everything that's kind of been portrayed, I suppose. And I think Vera probably could have just dealt with it better in the interview, to be honest.
Yeah, I think from listening to Vera's interview, she generally answers the questions that she's asked, which I think we're not probably used to from managers. And
very direct.
Yeah. And look, maybe I think people say it's a Dutch thing. She is a very direct person, and it's not like it's the first time that she has answered questions like that by giving exactly what she thinks or saying what's on her mind. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but that's just the way that she tends to go about her business. Katie's reaction has definitely shone even more of a spotlight on it. For her, Rebecca, I know that you know her. She is the captain of Ireland, though, and now here we are a few hours post-match, and the conversation very quickly has moved on from Ireland coming home from the World Cup with the point to what's the relationship like between the Republic of Ireland manager and the Republic of Ireland captain. Was it the right thing to do to send out that tweet, do you think?
I'm
putting you on the spot now.
I think it's probably an emotionally charged tweet. You know, I know there's been a lot of baggage, you know, that's come in the last 6 months with Vera. You know, she's kind of said a few things. There's obviously things that have followed her. You know, I don't think she's even left the stadium when she actually gave that interview herself. So I agree with Laura in the fact that, you know, there's a time and place. You know, it didn't need to be said there and then. You know, if she did or didn't say it, I won't go too much into it. But yeah, I just think it's a case that, look, I think Katie's probably frustrated with the way the whole, you know, World Cup was approached in terms of, you know, questions that were posed to them before, you know, they left for Australia. And
she addressed that actually on the telly yesterday.
Yeah.
There was an interview with her, and she said that it was frustrating because she went in to that pre-match press conference, I think it was 27 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And as she got up at the end of it, she said, thanks for the two questions or three questions that you asked about the World Cup that's coming up. So you can see her frustration.
Yeah. No, definitely. You can see a frustration. I think it's probably coming to a bit of a head now that everything's kind of, you know, done and finished. I don't know what Vera's approach is. I don't know if it's just the case she's coming out swinging now, you know, the fact that maybe she's not going to continue with the FAI. I don't know that. Again, I just don't know what way the FAI are approaching it, because we haven't heard too much about
it either.
You know, so yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it goes. But look, it's, I think it was just a time and place for that kind of comment.
From everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
From everybody, I would say. Because nobody wants this sour ending to a World Cup. And
it's been so positive other than that, you know, on the pitch.
Exactly. So much good about it in terms of the team and connecting with the, you know, the fan base and everything, and the way they played and the way they represented. I thought it was, you know, amazing. So it would be sad if, you know, this kind of lingered and blemished all of that, and this is the narrative now as opposed to what the girls done.
So today is Monday, the homecoming is Thursday. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to be said and done between Monday and Thursday for this team to stand in O'Connell Street and have a united front and be able to positively reflect on the experience that we have. So it'll be interesting over the next few days, if we hear from Vera Powell, if we hear from Katie McCabe again, you know, whether it's in person or via social media, and whether or not we hear from the FAI. But I do think that we need clarity around Vera Powell's situation, around how the players are feeling as well post-World Cup, and where the FAI stand. Because if we don't, between now and then, the legacy is going to be very much around a fallout between the Ireland captain and the Ireland manager, where it should be about the watch parties, the engagement, the identification of this team, the identity of this team, and also the fact that they went, Laura, to a World Cup and they equipped themselves pretty well, I feel anyway. What do you think?
100%. Like, I mean, you see, like, Spain getting a hammer in there earlier against Japan 4-0, and like other big nations as well. Like, there's hammerings going on in the World Cup, but we weren't by any means hammered, you know what I mean? And we were competitive in every game. And I think even before the World Cup, that's what my hope was, that we would be competitive and that we would have, you know, a special moment or a few special moments. And I think in every single game we were competitive, you know, right to the very end. And you know, it was tight, obviously, a 1-0, 2-1 loss, and a draw. Like, I mean, it's been quite positive from our point of view, like our first time ever at World Cup. That, like I said, the special moment was Katie McCabe's goal. We went 1-0 up and everyone's thinking, is this going to be a special win, you know, in Irish history? But it's still a very special moment because she's the first woman to ever score for Ireland at a World Cup. And we'll remember that forever, you know, and little kids, you know, like I said, they'll be inspired by Katie McCabe and they'll be all practicing trying to score corners directly from corners, you know what I mean? But it is, it's one of those special moments. I think even though we lost, I think, like, it just gives me great joy to see, like, even my friends that might not know much about football text into the group saying, oh, bring Abby Larkin on. And I'm like, delighted.
They know who she is.
Now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they didn't know a few weeks ago. It's just brilliant that that our household names now, they are stars. You know what I mean? And they've always been stars, but it's just that everybody knows it now. And that's really special for, especially, you know, for everybody who's been involved in women's football in Ireland for years, and for everybody who's fought for the equality and for, you know, for the opportunities for women's football. This is has been our moment, I suppose, and it's only going to get better and better. And I've been telling everybody that, you know, even before we've qualified, it's like, if we can just qualify for a big tournament, everybody's going to want to see them, you know what I mean? And it has happened, so that's hugely positive for the growth of football in Ireland, and, you know, for I suppose for inspiring the next generation. And, you know, everybody wants to be Katie McCabe, Louise Quinn, Denise O'Sullivan, you know, and everyone knows their names now, and they are absolutely global stars now.
Yeah, and everyone has opinions as well, which is great. You know, you love having that debate and discussion about selection and about where Denise O'Sullivan should be playing and whether Katie should be in a more 100% advanced position. Like, those are conversations that you wouldn't have had with the likes of the post person, or, you know, the person at the water cooler, whoever it is, you know. And it's brilliant.
I'm going to shops in the Ireland jersey, and, like, someone might say, oh, did you watch the game? And then I'll start giving an answer at the counter because I want to talk about it, you know. Well, everyone's obviously so interested, and it's great to see that interest, because it's just, honestly, it's amazing. And everyone involved in women's football will tell you the same, you know. You see people over there and everything. I would love to have got over myself, but, you know, it's just been brilliant. And see the amount of fans out in Australia, obviously it was good that was in Australia because of the amount of Irish out there as well, you know. It's just been amazing and so positive, and obviously we don't want to, kind of, the sour notes to come in and ruin any of that positivity.
You're at the forefront, really, of women's and girls football, because you are in Drogheda United. You know, I see you doing your analysis in the Women's National League. You're so involved in many different facets of the game. Laura, what do you think needs to happen now for this legacy to be secure? What do the FAI need to do to make sure that there is a generation who will have watched this World Cup and keep staying involved in the game?
Well, I suppose, first of all, it's up to, I suppose, all the adults in the country to make sure that there's opportunities for girls, because, like, most of that Irish team will tell you, they played with boys along the way, and it wasn't just like, obviously there's an advantage to playing with boys, but there's a lot of girls who don't want to play on boys' teams, and the reason they played was because of lack of opportunity or lack of girls' teams, you know. So, I mean, obviously, it's the grassroots, it's the providing opportunities, it's making sure that there is opportunities in different areas, because there's still areas of the country that is quite sparse and isn't strong in girls' football underage. Like, there might be still girls who could be 10 years of age and have no girls' team to play with near their area. Like, that's not good enough, you know what I mean? And that's, I think, the FAI's focus has to be identifying the areas and making sure that there's growth in those areas, that no matter where somebody is from, like, I remember Savannah McCarthy and Kerry, like, had to play with the boys. Roman McLaughlin, you know, like, in Donegal, had to play with the boys, and had to kind of, even Heather Payne there, had to go and train with the emerging talent boys teams, you know, to make sure that they were getting trained at a high level. And that's when they were internationals, you know what I mean? So underage, like under 17s and that. Like, that's okay, but it's just, it's important that there's opportunities there, but obviously investment, and it's not only the FAI that can do that, it's obviously the government that needs to invest in football, because, you know, when you're looking at the problems in Ireland and you're looking at how do we solve them, it's investment and it's facilities, and that's what it all comes down to be honest, because there is a lack of facilities. I mean, we've had the wettest July ever.
it's been awful.
That's nobody's fault, but in saying that, there's not enough all-weather pitches in for a country of our climate, you know what I mean, to make sure that the pitches are playable and that they can go ahead. You know, it's just not, there's just not enough. So it's investment and it's facilities is really key in the growth, I suppose, because I know there's clubs now who are going to be inundated with people looking, girls wanting to join, and they might say, well, we can't fit anymore, mm-hmm. we don't have facilities or whatever it may be. But I do think they should find a way, because it's just an excuse. There's always a way.
Yeah. Rebecca, what do you reckon?
Yeah, much of the same. Look, I know Laura's done great work, mm-hmm. you know, all through the underage setups with the Irish teams, and obviously now at Drogheda United, and it's great, obviously, to hear her aspect. You know, it's I think been a topic of conversation for a long time, is the investment and that grassroots football. You know, it's just having those opportunities. I know when I was younger, you know, I would have played for a boys team up to a certain age, and thankfully, you know, at Temple Oak United, they had just started up an under 10 section, you know, for us to get involved in, and that was few and far between back then. You know, so much of the same. Keep it going. Now I hope this momentum of how well the girls have done, you know, people will notice that women's football is something to get involved in. And I keep going back to 2017 and before that, and how much effort has gone into, you know, equality and, you know, the sponsorships that have come through, the endorsements. Like, that just needs to keep going now after the girls get back.
I know we don't know what's going to happen with Vera Powell's contract situation, and whether or not she will be staying on in the role. The next few days are going to be interesting. Her contract is set to expire in the coming weeks. If it does expire and she isn't in the role, who do you think, Laura, would be the person to take over from her?
Well, it's kind of hard, and I haven't really thought about it too much, to be honest with you. Obviously, we've all been focusing on the World Cup. I suppose it's important just that the FEI, like, consider all people. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we kind of feel that, like, we have to look outside of Ireland for coaches, but we have some top class coaches within Ireland who obviously would know the game inside out as well. So I do think that, you know, obviously it would depend who's looking for the job and all the rest, but and I think it would be something that a lot of high profile coaches would want that job now that the support is there and that things have changed, you know what I mean? And like, it will be interesting to see if that happens, and I suppose I'll have to sit down and have a good day. Who might want to get in there, but yeah, I think it's going to be interesting now to see what happens with Vera, and it quite possibly could be a new manager coming in.
Rebecca?
Yeah, I'm probably much of the same. Obviously, I know Tom Elms is there as the assistant coach, you know, and I think he's very much involved in the under-16 setup, you know, before he got involved, the senior setup. I don't know if that's something that is in his sights. I don't know if the FAI would consider it. I know he is obviously a great coach, but like that, you know, it's going to be a case of sitting down and you know, if it is the case that there's someone new coming in, picking the right person, you don't want to just, you know, jump at whoever decides that they think they're suitable. But, you know, it's a really exciting time to be involved in Irish women's football, I think. And I think there'll be many coaches within Ireland and obviously internationally that'll be chomping at the bit to get involved here.
Yeah, I was really interested in watching or listening to Hervé Renard, the French manager, who used to be the Saudi men's manager. And he was paid 20 times more to manage the Saudi Arabian men's team, but he wanted to go and manage the French women's team. He wanted to give that a go and try and win trophies. So there's definitely an interest in people making the jump from men's football into women's football, and of course lots of really strong female candidates as well in the game. Do you think, just before we finish up, Laura, like, just given everything that we know, and we can see that there seems to be some sort of breakdown in relationships between Vera and the players, do you think that it would be possible for her to continue in the role, given everything that's happened over the last few weeks and months?
Yeah, I think it can be repaired. Well, only from what I know, I suppose. And the thing, that's the big question, I suppose. They will have to review what exactly has gone on, because, I mean, we only know bits and pieces from what we're hearing. And obviously that, you know, that recent one there just after the game today with Katie and Vera kind of not seeing eye to eye. But that can be repaired. That could be repaired tonight with the two of them sitting down. Do you know what I mean? So I do think... But that would be very important, because if you're not on board, if you don't have your captain on board, I mean, that's your dressing room lost, I feel, you know. And Katie's such a big player for Ireland, and it's important that, you know, that they're working together and seeing eye to eye, I suppose. But I think it's a frustration with Katie about not getting forward more and all that type of stuff, and the role she's played in the team. So I do think that it can be repaired, but, you know, obviously it depends on how things have gone, you know, inside. So it's something that the FAI need to probably sit down and talk to the players, you know, individually maybe, and just assess how the World Cup has gone, and then make a decision, rather than I don't think there's any need to rush into a decision. Like, and I think it was even a bit silly, there was so much talk even going into the third game about her contract, because I'm like, that's not the time to do anything. Like, let's play this third game and then have the chats about it. So I think you know, I'm kind of glad that the FAI have waited till after the World Cup to talk about contracts, because I think if you give a manager a contract before a big tournament and then it doesn't go so well, then, you know, you're stuck with them in a way. So I think for once it's actually a better decision by the FAI. And, you know, I think it depends how things have really gone on the inside, whether it can be repaired or not. But from what I can see, it could be repaired. But obviously, time will tell and we'll see what happens.
Rebecca, can it be repaired, do you think?
Yeah, well, like anything, look, I'm sure it could be. From a personal point of view, I think it's probably gone beyond that at this point. I think there's been so much that's gone on. As Laura said, you know, everyone doesn't know everything that happens within camp. So, look, I think it's just a case that, look, she's taken us as far as she can. You know, it's a weird one, because she's obviously voiced that she does want to stay. Mm-hmm. But there's not been a kind of support as such from, you know, players. I think Megan Connolly was questioned in the presser the other day, you know, is she in support? She's like, it's not her decision. So there wasn't any kind of direct, you know, positives from that side of things. And obviously we've not really heard too much from the FAI, but I think it should have been a case of waiting till after the tournament ended anyway, just to see how she got on. So it'll be an interesting time, to say the least.
Absolutely. Laura, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be talking to you again soon, and best of luck with the Drogheda gig as well. Doing great work. Continue it, and no doubt we'll be doing lots more. Rebecca, you might stick around. We're going to be talking about the Dubs. You're more than welcome. Okay. We're going to take a quick break now, though. Stay with us. Austin is here as well, and we'll also be joined by former Laois player Ross Munley.
Game on 2FM. One day while the light is glowing,
big, huge, massive roar from the fans here, all 82,000 of them. Challenged strongly there by Lee Gannon. It's still white and he loses it. And it's Todd O'Callaghan who picks it up way back there. And Dublin now break. 2 men are forward for Dublin. The reinforcements are arriving. It's Cormac Costello. Has Paul Mannion ahead of him. Kerry are stretched. Mannion kicking. And that's gone over the crossbar. Down into the corner it goes to David Clifford, who's got 1 point so far. Kicks it inside here beautifully. Gainey has it in front of goal. Gainey has a goal-scoring chance, and he puts it in the back of the net. Coming after 37 minutes of play, set up by David Clifford. But what a finish that was. And now look at the scoreline. It's Kerry who are ahead by a point.
Now let's stop time and enjoy this moment.
Gives it as far as Jack Barry. Then Gavin White looks across. Ooh! Intended short passes have been intercepted here. And here's an opportunity. Bascal setting up a chance. And it's in the back of the net from Paddy Small. It was a ricochet, but it's Paddy Small who's going to take the credit. And it now is a level game. Level for the fifth time. But Dublin have it back. Niall Scully has it again. The next score is surely a winner, if there is one. And it's come to Sean McMahon. McMahon plays it out to the right-hand side to Dean Rock. Can he win the All-Ireland? He may well have. It's not. It's gone off the goalkeeper's hands. He kept it in play. Back to Bascal it comes again. And Mannion finally does put it over the bar. Paul Mannion with his fifth of the day. He's made it 114 to 113. There's still a few seconds left. It's not a new ball. It's all over. It's all over. And Dublin have beaten Kerry in the 2023 All-Ireland Final. It was gripping, dramatic, exciting in the end. Dublin came. They triumphed against the Kingdom. What an achievement for them. Champions for the 31st time.
Darren O'Neill and Darren Frahill and Barry O'Neill with the montage making production there, and a brilliant job by them. Austin O'Malley is with me. Ross Munley joins us on the line to reflect on another big day for the Dubs. Worthy champions, Ross, do you reckon?
I think so. On the day, kind of had that feeling inside in Croke Park that Dublin were just that tiny bit ahead of Kerry throughout yesterday. And I suppose when you look back on it, when they were in kind of the big moments, they went Dublin's way and they made them go their way, and I think deserving victors, although the margin was very, very fine.
Very fine. And it was one of those ones that was just in the balance the whole way through. You could really never tell who was going to win, Austin.
Yeah, no, it ebbed and flowed, and there was very, very little in it. Like, it was just marginal at the end. And I suppose when you look back on it, there was a couple of key moments. Obviously, the turnover, Basquel's turnover, I thought on Gavin White was the kind of similar moment. And, you know, Jack O'Connor has referenced post game that, like, it energised the hill and it sent a bolt of electricity around the ground. And you could feel that very much in the stadium at the time. And it you know, Dublin kicked on in terms of the belief they got. I know Kerry countered, came back and went three again, but you just felt at that moment it just re-energised them. And I think throughout the game, just the way that they had gone about their business, even in their transitions, they were so quick and they were a little bit more energetic across the ground, where Kerry were more laborious in their build-up and so on. And I thought they didn't go after it maybe early enough. But I think deserving winners, yeah, in the end, in like the scoreboard doesn't lie, I suppose, at the end.
It was such an interesting one, Ross, even just from like the man of the match perspective. Mannion picked it up with 5 points, but like, I just thought, like, across the 30 players, the subs, there was nobody really that kind of took my breath away. You know, often in a final you'll have one star, like, you could have given it to anybody. There were so many players contributed in different ways, whether it was Jack McCaffrey coming on, the physical presence of James McCarthy, Cluxton and his kicks. There just seemed like around the pitch everybody did a bit, but nobody did loads.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely spot on, Marie, and that was the vibe in the stadium as well, because it was such a tense affair. And kind of when the rain started to fall before throw-in, you know, many people were saying, I hope it's not decided by a single mistake and so on. And like, just every inch was fought for out on that pitch yesterday. It was just amazing. And even down to David Clifford, he could have exited that game with 6-7 points, and he did some really, really good things in that game as well. So for so many of the players out there, the margins are quite small. You take the Paddy Small goal, almost an unbelievable block from Paul Murphy. He did the right thing, the brave thing, got hands on the ball, but it ends up in the back of the net, and Paddy Small will go down in the history books as having scored a vital, vital goal for Dublin. So your point is absolutely spot on. It was so tense and tight yesterday, and for many performances yesterday, it could have gone either way. And Basquel, in terms of probably having a quietish first half, and then second half absolutely came alive, kicked 2 points, got the interception for the goal. Also, I think he assisted another score as well. So you're at this level, you're talking about the absolute of fine margins. I have to say, it was a thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable game yesterday. And probably the highlight for me was the physicality in the game. And that's down to the way David Goff reffed it. So he reffed it so consistently throughout. He always felt you knew what was going to be free and what wasn't, and he had a huge part to play in it being such an enjoyable game as well.
He got a bit of slack, Ross, though. Did you think it was undeserved?
Yeah, I didn't really see him. I couldn't really understand. First of all, we don't know who exactly was giving him the slack and all of that kind of thing. Like, there's so much happening out on the field of play.
Yeah, well, I can tell you now, two of the panel I had on Radio 1 yesterday weren't impressed with his performance.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I don't know who I don't know if it was for either team.
Yeah, well, one Kerry, one Dublin. It was Colm Cooper and Paul Flynn.
Nicely balanced.
As a neutral yesterday, I knew going into the game, Goff style is he allows the kind of swarm defence. If you take the ball into contact when he's refereeing, the advantage will be on the team, will be to the team who's trying to dispossess. And it's very rare that as if the player in possession goes into traffic, that they'll come out of there with it. And likewise, while he's very, very focused on allowing the aggression there, any of the smaller stuff like the jersey pulls off the ball and things like that, he's very, very finicky on as well. So I think Goff reffed it the way he always did. And I think people spoke about, you know, the tenacity in the game and the turnovers and it being end to end. And that's because of the physicality that was allowed. And I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it from start to finish yesterday. And I was there as a neutral. So that's only my opinion, of course.
Austin?
Yeah, no, definitely, like, it added to it. And I think the physicality that we seen out there was, like, it was at a level that I hadn't probably seen before. But and he did let a bit go. I think the big one for me at start was maybe the James McCarthy one on Shawnee O'Shea. I thought it was a little bit late and it looked a little bit high in that, and I don't think he furnished a card for that. So that might have sort of set, you know, temperatures flaring early on. But on the balance of it, I think he handled it pretty well. The decision, I suppose, on between McFitz and Clifford at the end with the jersey pull and that, and it being overturned. But that was rooted through last night. We've seen different angles of it, and it looked like that, you know, it was a tangle. Both were at it. So I think overall, on the balance of it, he done an okay job. Yeah.
Even even the crowd booing him as well, I just thought it was all very harsh and totally unnecessary. And it seems in the balance, most people think that he did an all right job. Ross, as much as I was delighted for Mick Fitz and the performance and the Nine All-Irelands and the work that he's put in, I was really devastated for David Clifford as well. To go into that game and to carry so much on his shoulders and to have dealt with the loss of his mother and everything that goes with that, and to have performed so consistently for Kerry and just to have one of those days when things didn't go his way, I thought it was so tough.
Yeah, very tough. And listen, I'm not going to go start comparing any of my performances to Clifford, but I was looking at it yesterday. And when you are being so tightly marked, and there's days that you get that, like, he, in a lot of ways, he did so many things right. He won all of those possessions. He got himself into scoring positions, although he would have probably liked them to be higher percentage opportunities. He got the shots off. And, like, you're talking about absolute the absolute margins. And in saying that as well, I think he had two assists in the game. One was that beautiful right-footed pass right down in the corner. Like, you're looking at the replays of that. Clifford is right in the corner. Mick Fitz is there on top of him. Mick Fitz has the sideline and the end line as a help to try and box Clifford in, and still he found that right footed pass over across the goals to Ganey, and it ends up in the back of the net. So, like, on, and this is back to your point there a second ago with trying to pick out a man of the match on the day or whatever, sometimes it's the smallest little things that can edge your performance as having played really well or in other people's eyes quite poorly. And as I said, Clifford, on another day, he could have clipped a couple of points, but for him it wasn't to be, and it's as a result it's Mick Fitz's day. But you couldn't say that Clifford was bet to X amount of balls and he couldn't get himself into the game. He got himself the opportunities and he shot, and unfortunately for him and Kerry, it didn't come off. And it'll go down as a big day in the history books for Mick Fitz and his 9 All-Ireland medals, along with Cluxton and James McCarthy, who's just absolutely phenomenal. James McCarthy, you would just pick him in any team over the centuries. Just an incredible guy and competitor.
Yeah, he seems it, doesn't he, Austie? Like, just never shies away from any responsibility, just takes everything on, carries his team on his back, it feels like.
Yeah, no, he's an incredible competitor, like, and to see, I suppose, what he has put in, the mileage he has put in over the years, and the way he has carried himself on and off the field, and just, he's a guy that fronts up the whole time, and yesterday again, like, you know, and he's been there so often when the game has come calling. And you can just see the esteem that his teammates hold him in as well. Like, so he's a real guy that has kind of glued all this together and kept people together as well. And you can see the impact that he has from a leadership perspective within the squad as well. You know, and he's a guy that they reference that you just go to war for every day. And he's such a humble guy as well, the way he comes across. So he's a real, real leader, and one that, like, Dublin will sorely, sorely miss when he steps away.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the O'Byrne Cup team sheets now in January to see
already,
who's going to be lining out, or who's thinking of coming back, or who's on that 26 or whatever Desi does, if Desi stays. We don't know what's going to happen with anything at the moment. But what about Cluxton, Ross, and the role that he played, and even coming back? So many eyebrows were raised that day. He appeared out of the tunnel, and you could tell he was back and he meant business.
Yeah, and you know what? I think a lot of people were split on this from the time it happened. I had absolutely no doubt that it was the right thing for Stephen Cluxton at the time and the right thing for Dublin. If he's good enough, you hear the phrase, if he's good enough, or he or she is good enough, they're old enough. I think you can design the t-shirts now. If you're good enough, you're young enough as well, because he has just been fantastic. And you know what, when he strode forward for that to take that free at the start of the game, it was either the free or the 45, just the strike of the ball off his so boot clean. And it kind of just I was sitting there looking at it thinking, oh, there's something different about Dublin today, that like any of the question marks, any of the doubts, like it was such a beautiful strike. I kind of sat there and thought, oh, this is Dublin are going to be really, really difficult to beat today. It was such an important moment of the game, even though it was so early on, and just he cantered back down to his position, no fuss, not even gesturing in any way, shape or form to anybody, just calmness personified, and a masterstroke from Desi Farrell. And I'm also delighted for Cluxton as an individual, because there were so many people talking about, did he go because of this, that and the other, and why, what a way to bow out. And just for him to come back and seal his ninth, and when he goes again, it'll be kind of absolutely on his own terms. And it looked like he really enjoyed himself after the game yesterday. And fair play to him, and fair play to Desi Farrell.
And just in that, Ross, as well, to think that he executed 100% on kickouts yesterday, given the conditions and given, you know, the press of Kerry at times and all of that, that he got away, I think it was a 23 from 23.
Wow.
Over the course of the game, like, which is phenomenal when you think of it in an All-Ireland final, conditions-wise, the pressure and everything, as you probably said earlier. But he just seemed to be on a different level in terms of calmness and composure, and that I think it does reverberate throughout the team. And it gives you, when you have a keeper like that sitting at your, you know, at your minding your back door, it gives you great confidence all around the house as well, you know.
You're spot on that, Austin. And there was a point yesterday coming towards the end in the second half where I think it might have been Sean O'Shea went into Markham when Dublin had a free out. And
that's right.
You know, just the awareness of Cluxton, he started jogging off into the number four corner back position to take Sean O'Shea further away from the kicker and further away from being able to kind of also try to intercept what was going to be a quick free. I think Kilkenny might have ended up coming short for it. Just that kind of awareness, and that's his threat, that even a goalkeeper that had to be marked to make sure that that Kerry were going to give themselves any chance, and his awareness just to pull completely out of the way and distract Sean O'Shea. It's remarkable awareness. And listen, one of the players that we'll talk about for the best ever in Gaelic games for many years to come.
Changed the game.
Yeah, and even though Dublin won and it was brilliant for them, it doesn't feel like this Kerry-Dublin rivalry is done. You know, I'm already looking forward to next season and what it'll bring. And you throw in Derry and throw in Galway and Monaghan. And Dublin were good yesterday, but it's not like you're looking at the Limerick Hurlers thinking, right, we're going to have a decade of dominance here. There's so much to look forward to.
Oh, there is, yeah. And only this morning, the same, I was thinking about it again. And the margins, you know, are so small and tight now. And I'm sure, like, the Kerry have gone away down the road. And already I'm thinking that they're packaging that hurt and they're thinking about next year. And this, like, you know, depending on, Kerry will use this, and I would no doubt that they'll be back, and they could be back in devastating form. They have a few bits and pieces to tidy up. And I've seen Jack O'Connor already reference it about how they use it. But I'm sure that they're going to be back. And again, as you alluded to, Derry are not that far away. Mm. We've other teams stepping up. So it's not as if there's a big chasm between, you know, the top one or two either. So it'll be a very, very intriguing championship again next year, I think, you know. And as you said there, we'll all be watching the O'Byrne Cup team sheets and the McGrath team sheets to see, you know, Kerry probably need to unearth maybe one or two more players, even the likes of maybe that, you know, Dara Roach was in there earlier on and he picked up an injury. He's a guy that, you know, had he been in full tilt, he could have been something they could have brought in there yesterday. So they probably need to add a little bit, and I think it's something that they will do in the winter to try and unearth one or two more to you know, as a supporting cast for Clifford up front.
Yeah, because he's still so young as well, Ross, you know what I mean, which is brilliant. You know, we could have, if we're looking at how long Cluxton is going, we could have a lot more years a day for Clifford as well.
20 years.
Yeah, listen, he's absolutely remarkable, and as I say, if a few things had gone his way yesterday, we could have been talking about him. But I just felt in yesterday's game, the resilience of Dublin, as I said, they got the goal when they were 3 points down, and then they came from three down again straight away after that. And just one thing I noted on my programme yesterday, I think on three different occasions Dublin scored from their own kick out directly after they had conceded. And you know, small little things like that are so important in games to you know, take away the opposition's momentum and so on. That kind of desire, and you know, Austin talked about maybe Roach being an addition to Kerry next year. When you look at the impact of Jack off the bench yesterday, like two assists, he was just electric. And in saying that, credit to I saw him take off at one stage, and Stephen O'Brien, I think it was tracked him for 80 yards, and it was one of those ones when Jack didn't get on the ball, but O'Brien was right there for him. And was we're all talking about Dublin, and obviously they win and they get all the plaudits. The effort from Kerry yesterday was monumental. Like two big heavyweights slugging it out for 76 or 8 minutes. You know, every time Thomas Sullivan came down the field in the first half, Cormac Costello was right there beside him. They were having an unbelievable battle off the ball as well. There was to and fro between the two of them. And effectively, Costello had to give up his game from a scoring perspective to make sure that he tried to neutralise Thomas Sullivan. Just unbelievable stuff. And
selfless stuff.
And far away from the glitz and the glamour and kicking, maybe wanting to kick points, like Costello was with him every inch of Thomas Sullivan's run yesterday. And these are the things you don't always see, or people don't always get the credit for. It's
one of those games, Ross. I think we're going to have to watch back a few times. We're going to have to take a break now, though. Ross, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back shortly. Austie and Rebecca are staying with me.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So I'm going to turn my attention now to the Premier League. Liverpool have announced that Virgil van Dijk is their new captain. Right man for the job, Rebecca Cray?
Yeah, I think he's the most natural person to step into that role. We've seen him taking the armband last season, you know, when Jordan Henderson maybe wasn't on the pitch and Milner wasn't on either. And obviously then with Trent coming in as vice captain, you know, he's a born and bred Scouser. So I'm sure that's a great, you know, kind of monumental achievement for himself. So yeah. Happy out as a Liverpool fan.
Well, it's going to come thick and fast because we only have a few days before the Premier League starts, so we will be previewing that, no doubt. It's all we have time for this evening, though. Bede da Silva's up next. Andrew O'Connor is here tomorrow, and he will be looking back at some of the Ireland football reaction. And also, he will be talking to Don McLean at the Galway races.
RTE 2FM.